Hello, and welcome to the Morning Bell podcast, where we interview authors, discuss writing-related topics, and talk about the writing process as a whole. If you want any more information about the Morning Bell and what it is, look up themorningbell.net. If you have any questions or suggestions for topics that you'd like to see discussed, email the co-editor of the Morning Bell, Kezia Lebansky, at the email address keziaa@themorningbell.net. Thank you, and we hope you enjoy listening. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the second Morning Bell podcast. My name is Joel Martin, and I'm the host for this episode and of the previous one. With me today is Lucas DeQuinzio, the co-editor of the Morning Bell. Hello. Lucas, how are you going?
Yeah, I'm all right.
Doing well?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Anything interesting happen to you before I introduce our lovely guest?
No, never.
Okay, just wondering. Okay, our guest today is Sophie Lovell, also known on the internet and on her writing endeavors as Sophie Mannix. She's the office manager at the ACT Writers Center, an emerging writer with a monthly column in ACT Write magazine. She dreams of working in a publishing house in London, but until that day comes, she spends her time helping writers figure out how to get to the next level in their career, connect with the writing community, and find answers to all of their other little questions. She's also studying English at the Australian National University. Sophie, good to have you on the podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Fantastic. Sophie Lovell, Sophie Mannix. There you go. Pen name. Interesting.
Yeah.
Let's talk about pen names, actually, because that was the thing we wanted to talk about. Why? Why'd you have a pen name?
I like the idea of being able to differentiate my writing from my professional world. Also, I was really obsessed with internet safety when I was a kid, and lots of my friends genuinely think my surname is Mannix.
Yeah.
So. Oh. Which is strange. I remember once I had a friend who just had a different name on her Facebook. It was like an inside joke or something, and someone wrote that as like their reference or something.
Oh,
that's terrible.
It wasn't something stupid like, you know, Jason Farts McGee or something. It was like something that sounded like a real name.
A legit name, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm Sophie Mannix on Facebook, and I always get these messages from people that are like named like Amy Mannix. Hey, are we related? Are we related? I don't know.
Like, no, I'm
probably not.
The distant relation, the distant cousin, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I do have distant relations that surnames is Mannix, but...
Okay, that just makes it incredibly confusing, then.
Yeah, it does. Like, I don't know, are you related to this vague person that I kind of know? Was that once? Yeah. Yeah, no, but pen names are really interesting, I think.
Our previous guest had a pen name, Lucas, Cassandra Longley, otherwise known as Cassandra L., I mean, that's just, like, you know, removing the surname and just keeping it as a L dot. But, yeah, Lucas, what is your pen name?
I don't have one, and neither do you.
I did, actually.
You did?
I did have a pen name on my first drafts. It was known, and this is a big reveal, internet, here you go. It was Frederick Uther Noble.
That's awful.
That is awful. It is incredibly pretentious, and I'm very proud of it.
So you decide to get your short, snappy name.
My legit name.
I need something pretentious to match my fantasy.
Exactly, and because I was writing fantasy, you know, you got to fit with the audience there. No offense to the audience, or maybe there is. But the thing with that name is, okay, I'll break it down for you. Okay, so Frederick, it's a nice, you know, Anglo-Saxon name, very strong. Uther being King Arthur, so his father Uther Pendragon. There you go, fantasy tie. And then Noble, I have no idea why I chose Noble. I guess it just sounded cool. But yeah, I put that as my pen name, and then I realized that it's an awful idea, and then I just use my real name. But I can definitely see, like, the benefits of using a pen name, especially in changing genre, for instance. Go on.
Oh, yeah, no. Of course. Like Nora Roberts.
Oh, I think I think we're having a bit of lag here. Also, just a preface, by the way, listeners, that there is a bit of lag because Sophie's in Canberra and we're in Melbourne and it's Skype, so there will be issues. But hopefully we don't get any drops or anything like that. Just a warning for the future listening. There you go.
Yeah, my internet's dropping out a little bit.
But should be fine. But anyway, continue with your point.
Yeah, we have lots of members that have the same name as famous writers, and I look at it for a minute, and then I remember that they actually live in, like, San Francisco. Yep. So I can see the benefit of using a pen name if you have a similar name to a famous writer.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, Garth Nix, who wrote, like, the Mr. Monday series and such, and Abhorson, he doesn't have a pen name and is very specific about it, and in every interview he does, he says he doesn't have a pen name and he just had the perfect name for a fantasy writer.
that takes some bravery to keep that name. There you go. Lucas, you're gonna say something?
Was I?
I think you were.
Oh, probably about my name.
Probably about Lucas de Quinzio.
Yes, I think to most it's somewhat exotic enough.
I mean, I told you last week, not last week on the last podcast, that it is a very exotic sounding name, De Quinzio. Yes, right. Yeah.
Are you Spanish or anything?
Italian background.
Italian. Oh, sorry. Close enough. Wrong. Completely wrong. Oh, no.
Basically the same country. I mean,
I actually studied Italian for 6 months, so that's embarrassing.
Languages. Languages. I've studied languages and never managed to keep on one because I'm like, oh, that sounds like a good language to learn. Drop the language I'm learning, learn that one, never learn that one, move on to the next one. It's awful.
I love studying languages because they help me understand English.
Yeah.
But I don't have the commitment, like the time to commit to actually learning one properly. So I just learn it enough to learn the grammar and then I give up.
Yeah.
But I'm really good at English. I can tell you exactly, like, everything about all of the particles of speech. And
that's it. Writers would be proud. Definitely. Yep. But, yeah, it's interesting. Like, I was making – when I switched from – well, I mean, I'm still write fantasy. I just don't do it as much. Is when I switched to writing crime, I thought, hey, you know, a pen name would be great to differentiate my work. As it's two different brands, but I thought, no, you know, I'm not imaginative enough. I'm not creative enough to come up with a good, unpretentious name. So I'll stick with what I've got.
Yeah, I was reading an article. This is slightly related. This is on more about freelance writing. Mm-hmm. But I was reading an article, and this freelance writer, I don't remember if it was Benjamin Law or someone else, but they were writing, and they said that if you plan on writing full-time, you should have a specialist like part, and that should be your brand, and you should only write about that one thing. But if you're only writing part-time and you don't expect to make lots of money from it, then you should write as generally as you can so you can have as many opportunities. And I think that that's really interesting if you apply it to fiction. Like if it is where you want your money to be, you need to pursue that and market it really well and use that as your thing and find a niche in the market and where people will keep coming back to you. Whereas if it's just a hobby thing, then you can go as widely as you like and maybe you'll catch different people with different works.
Yeah. Let's actually jump straight into a topic with that one, because that's actually something I'd like to talk about, as in writing as a business. And I think that definitely times to the audience of The Morning Bell, you know, emerging writers and people who are interested in that kind of writing.
Yeah.
Lucas, like, what do you think? And then I'll jump on my thoughts about the subject and go back to Sophie. But what do you think about writing as a business compared to the ideas or the preconceptions people may have as, you know, writing is art and therefore you shouldn't plan it as a business?
Well, I spent the entire year trying to get a job somewhere in the writing industry, somewhere where writing is a business, and failed. So a lot of the reason for that is that people don't want creative writers. They want people who studied marketing. So maybe in some cases they can be very much separate. It's like, we don't want writers who do art. We want marketing people.
Yeah.
Marketing people. But that doesn't mean you can't do both.
Mm-hmm.
Art doesn't make you very much money a lot of the time. And you need money to eat.
Yeah, well, writers don't eat. Lucas, what are you talking about? No, but what do you think in terms of, you know, not just in getting a job in the writing industry, but, you know, creative writing as a business, like, you know, pumping out books left, right and center. You're just, you know, flooding the market with your work in order to make a living. Like, what do you think about that?
Yeah, that's like the pop music of.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, actually. Yeah,
if you're thinking about that, I think to begin with, at least most people go, I'm going to make books so I can make lots of money. They actually want to get some kind of story out.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
It's once you're in, I guess that's what you know, do you do it for money? Do you do it because you actually want to tell proper stories? I guess it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, technically.
Yeah. It's very odd subject because I know a lot of writers feel very strongly on both sides of the board, and some people believe in the idea of, you know, the purity of your work and keeping your work very precious to you, and therefore you shouldn't bow to market pressures and therefore just write for the sake of making money. I'm fortunate to have a job where it's writing, but it's not writing in a direct field. That I write in personally, and that's video game writing, and that's interesting because that contrasts pretty starkly with the personal writing that I do, and that's the job for me. And then I have my own writing, and that's a lot of people do that as well, whether it's the writing job or not. People deliver pizzas throughout the whole day, and then they write throughout the whole night. I think Sean Williams, I believe, is the example of that. He was a, you know, very hardworking writer in that respect. And I think that's like a really viable way of surviving as a writer, to do something else to further on your career. Yeah. But at the same time, I have nothing against writers that just put out a lot of books all the time in order to, you know, build up their profile and succeed in that field. Like, Sophie, what do you think about this subject? And I'm sure that working in a writer's center, you'd probably be exposed to that kind of idea from different speakers and such as well.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, like, most famous, like, really famous writers had other jobs, like, even historically. I believe that Ray Bradbury wrote his books on his lunch breaks,
mm-hmm.
Which is fascinating to me. But I think that writing, it depends on how you want to look at it. If you want to be able to live off your craft and you want that to be the only thing, then you need to go for it like a business. Whereas if you want to write for pleasure and you don't want to have those creative pressures put onto you, then do it on the side when you have time.
Mm.
I think that people who are writers, it is incredibly difficult to make money off just writing alone. And a lot of the time they have to supplement it with other things like doing speaking engagements or doing like teaching and tutoring and mentoring and manuscript assessments and all of those kinds of things once they have had some success. I think it is a gamble. And like I was saying earlier, I think that the first draft of anything is for telling the story. And then the second draft is when you go through it and you fix up the writing and you look at the audience and who you want to market it to, and then you cater it to them. And I don't think that you have to sacrifice the integrity of your art to write it towards someone and make it easy mm-hmm. to market.
Yep. Yeah. As in to place your work afterwards. And that's something we talked about on the previous podcast with Cassandra Lucas, is talking about genre and then understanding genre and such like that. But I suppose we can expand that subject to, you know, marketing within the genre that you're writing in. Yeah. With your writing, Lucas, do what's your process in that regard? What do you think of when you're putting together a screenplay or a short story? Do you think to yourself, this is what the audience wants to see, and therefore I will cater to that audience, while at the same time using, you know, the stuff that I like to write about? Or do you just strictly write for yourself, and then if they like it, well, so be it. But if they don't, well, too bad.
I guess, and I'm probably a bit guilty of not thinking of doing things, like starting things anyway, that are a bit too niche. But I think being, you know, what's funny? yeah. And then the other stuff comes later.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, humor's very difficult.
Yeah, I guess it's very different. Like, what's your marketing? People who like this kind of humor.
Yeah.
Well, that's, and that's enough. I guess I don't think to, like, what are the people who will give me money think is funny?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, no, that's interesting too, because even if you're writing fantasy, for example, you're looking at, okay, what kind of person is going to come and read a 16th century piece with lots of crime through it, set in a world very much like Victorian England? Like, you have to think of the person that you're writing towards.
On the other hand, if you can't think, I think you had to, you know, what do you want to do? Partly because if you think exclusively, what do people want? Then you think of kind of mass, what's popular? You know, just something really boring and already done.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I don't think you have to look at trends exactly. Trends are really difficult to pick. Like, we had the boy wizard trend, and then we had the vampire trend, and then the dystopian trend. You don't know, and now it's like realistic fiction, and you don't know what's coming next, but generally the books have to be written before it comes for them to be published when it does come. I think you just have to look at what is easy to market, like what styles of writing are nice and easy and accessible for your audience, and how can you match it to them? Not necessarily like the tropes and like the actual style of the novel, but the bits on top that are easy to then say, hey, look at this. This is awesome and you should come find it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely. And the trends, that's something we can talk about, is interesting. And I remember when I used to go into the bookshops and when I was in ACT, funny enough, there you go. And by the way, for those international listeners, ACT is the Australian Capital Territory. The capital of Australia, and it is a great place to live, by the way. So there's a plug for your state.
Don't listen to the naysayers who say it's horrible. Say, we were voted like the
best place to live. Don't listen to everyone else in Australia who says it's like a
horrible. That's
it. Like a report that came out that said Canberra was the best place to live in the world.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. It was fantastic.
Oh, it did too. I don't remember what kind. It wasn't like most livable city contest. It was some other thing.
I think it's safety or something. I'm not sure.
I don't know.
I'm not
sure. But yes, getting back to it, there you go. It's when I went into a bookshop and it was a very odd moment is when I walked in, and this was during, this was when George R. R. Martin put out his latest book in the A Song of Ice and Fire series. And I walked in, and his book was all across the front counter. And then I went to the back and to look at this, different sections. And I think it was during that time when the vampire trend was still very big. I could be wrong. I could be thinking of something else. And it seemed like people who were looking through those shelves, and yes, I do enjoy people watching, so there you go, going into those shelves, they seemed to be browsing, just having a look at the genre rather than at, the subject matter, I suppose, same thing in some ways, and seeing what they can buy from there. So, yes, it might be a cynical way to look at it and say, like, oh, you know, it's bad to target a trend, but I'm just wondering, I wonder if that also has a base. Like, I wonder if that's actually a very smart business decision to jump on a trend, not necessarily do exactly the same thing, but iterate and innovate on the genre and try and, you know, do some interesting stuff with it. What do you guys think?
Well, I have to say I've looked through bookshelves to kind of grab what's, you know, I've had a look through the humor shelves and stuff. What they got? What's here?
Mm.
What's here that I could do? Because really, what you need is one concept, and you can take it far. And I look at it instead of saying this is what I can say, What a load of shit. I don't want a book about with Grumpy Cat. I don't want a bunch of rubbish jokes.
Yeah.
And occasionally you find there's good and actual good ones, but, you know, like All My Friends Are Dead and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And more and more I'm finding, like, collections for webcomics in book form, which is nice. But, so it's like, that's what's pop. I guess it's almost an elitist point of view. Here's what's popular. I want to be better than that.
Yeah.
Well, I guess humor's a bit different because humor
section.
Yeah,
I'm not a great example, am I?
No, I'm just saying. I think that it runs off what's popular, especially what's popular on the internet right now. Like, there was that guy who had the correspondence about the spider, and like a bunch of YouTubers are coming out with books now that are going in the humor section, and that's slightly different to what I was going to say. But if you're following the trends that are like the mainstream fiction trends, like dystopian and realistic fiction and paranormal romance, etc., they're really hard to follow because all of the books that came out when that trend is really big would have been written and ready, like just in the submission pile, way before they actually hit shelves. I think you could possibly trend chase that kind of thing if you were self-publishing and digitally self-publishing.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd have to also be really careful because the thing about self-publishing is that you have to fund everything and also make sure it's as high quality as traditionally published books.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So even though you have like more time there, you'd still have to get an editor and like a cover designer and everything. So it'd be much easier to do it with self-publishing than it would traditionally, I think.
Yeah, to jump on trends, yep.
Yeah.
And
That doesn't stop people trying.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't. But, you know, there are lots of dystopian things that are coming out now, and dystopian's nowhere near as big as it was when The Hunger Games went big.
Yeah.
And those books aren't selling as well.
I would really like to see statistics from a publishing house like something like Penguin for OAPA to see when those trends hit, like the amount of people then submitted material that was, you know, in that vein.
Yeah, and then that's the other thing too, because their slush piles are going to be so saturated.
Yeah,
and if you follow the trend that is there, then you're just going to be another vampire novel.
Exactly.
And you have to make sure yours isn't just a good novel, but it's also the best vampire novel in their slush pile.
Yeah. And being the same as everybody else is like a straight kick out the door, I think.
The same as everyone else and then arriving 3 years late. Being the same as everyone else and arriving at the same time.
Yeah.
You're good. But it's going to happen, like, say, if people are trying to hop on, like, a young dystopian fiction, Hunger Games would be big. Even if you're looking for a young adult audience, that's still a pretty full genre. There's a lot of dystopian novels already.
There are so many, yeah.
Without people trying to jump on, you know, this Hunger Games bandwagon. So that would have been, people trying to get in, that would have been stuff to begin with.
Yeah, and the same with like the paranormal romance. As soon as that Twilight hit it big, they just pulled out all of the books that they were already considering that had anything to do with that, and they were all published all at once. It wouldn't have been suddenly my slush pile has lots of vampire novels, let's publish them.
Yeah.
It would have been, hey, look, these novels are good and we can sell them based on the success of this book.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they would have said that first bit.
These books are good. Well, it's now
I'm being mean.
That's
okay.
Some of them are good.
I enjoyed this book. How's that? Is that a better amendment?
There you go. Yeah. I enjoyed this book, and I think it deserves some love.
Yeah, I think we can make other people enjoy this book.
Yes. Sophie, like you said earlier when we were talking before, that, you know, you enjoy the young adult audience or that genre rather. Talk to me about the dystopian trend, because I know very little about this, actually, from The Hunger Games. I myself have not read The Hunger Games, which maybe I'll get to one day. But did you find any books, and this is the question within the question, do you find any books that came after that were good or better than The Hunger Games during this whole, like, trend?
I didn't enjoy The Hunger Games.
Oh, you didn't?
I really didn't.
Yeah.
So, I did enjoy some dystopian novels, so I actually really enjoyed Divergent.
Mm-hmm.
which was really big as well. It had a film this year.
Yeah.
I think that when one is pushed, there are lots behind it that are also.
Ooh.
There are
I
also...
think that was an internet outage.
No, it was a dramatic pause for effect.
What was it? I think she's back now.
I'm back. Sorry.
There you go. It's all good.
But young adult's really interesting because mm-hmm. you've got a lot of books that are really, really great and like really well written, but they're not. They don't sell as well as the other ones, and I suppose that's true for mm-hmm. everything. But yeah. Yeah, I think that there is still lots of dystopian in the yep. YA fiction market. Like the sequel to The Fifth Wave just came out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and The Fifth Wave was actually quite fun. So
yeah,
yeah. That's one.
Talk to me about why you didn't like the Hunger Games. That was an interesting thing you just dropped there at the start.
Oh no, people are gonna hate me.
I mean, you know,
I don't think our audience will care.
I don't think so. They're looking at it critically, I suppose.
They probably already looked down at it.
Yeah, maybe. But, what's wrong with the Hunger Games?
It felt like the writing style itself was written for a much younger audience than the content.
Yep.
And also, it was very boy-obsessed. And all through the second book, especially the second book, she wasn't sure which boy she wanted to be with, but they were going to kill her if she wasn't with this certain one, but maybe she didn't really love him.
It's a love triangle thing. Yeah.
Everyone was saying she was this really strong, independent female character, and she really, really wasn't. She really wasn't.
I haven't read the books that I've seen in the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's as far as I got with it. Not a lot of interest. But I've heard they're the criticisms I've heard.
Yeah, and a lot of people disagree with me, but...
And,
well, it's all subjective, as they say.
Yeah.
But, and let's actually segue into, like, a little movie segment, because I think, Lucas, we often end up talking to movies a certain amount, because screenwriting is a really important part of the writing industry.
Yeah.
It's definitely interesting to talk about that. So, let's actually go into that for a little bit. And I'll start off with saying that I completed my Morning Bell promise, and I watched the first episode of Happy Days. So there you go, Lucas.
Well done.
Yes, it was very charming, and I'm probably not going to watch the second episode. But
I can't believe you went from the very start instead of just finding it on TV or something.
No,
there's been an episode of Happy Days today. Just there.
I was just waiting for you. There you go. But yes, I saw Happy Days, and it was charming, and there you go. That's all I'll say about it. But here's the actual topic that I'm going to talk about. Have any either of you seen Dracula Untold?
No.
Okay. Well, I often see movies with my brother. Now, he's not a writer, but he's a good movie buff, and he enjoys his films. So often we go out and we watch a movie together. And he asked me to come along and watch Dracula Untold, and I really didn't want to see that film because I'd heard only bad things. And generally speaking, the Hollywood action movie is not my thing, for the most part. So I went in, and I watched the film. And I came out, and I kid you not, and maybe I'll lose all the credibility I have or didn't have, so I'll go into the negative. I liked it. Can I say that? I was very embarrassed when I came out, and I sheepishly told him, yeah, you know, it was actually all right. Couple things I'll talk about this movie, and I won't spoil anything for those of you who don't want to see it.
You don't know the story of Dracula.
Well, it's not Dracula. That's the first thing I'll say. It's basically completely different to all the literature that's, being a blood-sucking vampire is the closest you get to being Dracula in this movie. Like, that's it. It's name only. And I think that's, in a way, the reason why people don't like it is because you look at it and you think to yourself, huh, this is nowhere as good as any of the Dracula movies. And I say, it's not a Dracula movie. And had they branded it something else or called it something else, even slap Marvel on the title, it would have been fine. Because as a Marvel movie, let's just say it was made by Marvel, it would be fantastic and people would love it. And that's simply because it's a completely different audience they were going for, I think.
Yeah.
And that's a big thing that, you know, I want to ask, like, you know, what do you think about this? Because, you know, you might not have seen the movies, but other movies have had similar issues. And I'll just say one quick thing about Dracula, and then we'll move on to the actual theory behind this, is I liked Dracula simply because, one, cinematography at times, and yes, there's a lot of special effects, but some of the cinematography was gorgeous. And there's a particular scene where two characters are falling. It is, I consider, the most beautiful shot in that entire film. Lovely. It's a little predictable in terms of plot, as most Hollywood action movies are. But then again, you might as well hate the entire industry then, in that genre. And it had a very, and, you know, those of you who know me, no, I love Solomon Kane and the movie Solomon Kane. And Dracula had a lot of that feeling. Like, it had a lot of that. The protagonist was nothing that special, but I think he was well acted. And it was a generally very old-fashioned film in that regard. Like, an old-fashioned type of story, like a Solomon Kane story. And that's all I'll say on it before I get checked out of the park for liking Dracula. But it was a good film. Now, the topic that I was bringing up, and then we'll go on to what you guys have watched and what you liked, is, what do you think about that? Taking an old franchise, not franchise particularly, but taking an established character and then changing its whole genre, you know, changing the concept. What do you think of that?
Well, from a technical standpoint, a character like Dracula is public domain. You can do whatever the hell you want, technically.
Technically, yeah.
Should you? I'm just having a quick look at the IMDb page for Dracula Untold. There's a bunch of people complaining about the story that it's not true, yeah. Which I find funny, given the thing is called Dracula. So I don't know what the hell they're going on about, but I think it's risky, and it can certainly pay off, but you do risk alienating people. Just trying to think of an example particularly where it's worked. I know it's old, but the Frankenstein movies are nothing like the book.
Yeah.
Also the character a bit as well, and the dynamics between the characters, but I really like the way that that's been done, and I think that that's done by a very good set of writers and an excellent set of actors as well.
I wonder which Frankenstein movie you were thinking of. The original one? Or some... Because there was one recently.
Frankenstein.
Yeah.
I didn't watch it, but I've heard it's awful.
Clearly I don't see enough movies, because that sounds beautiful.
Yep, see it and, you know, tweet at me, tell me if it's awful, because...
If it's awful, it's how awful.
Is it the good awful?
Is it the right kind of awful? Because I'm in for that.
Yeah.
But I'm just thinking, maybe Sherlock Holmes, like, he's always, you know the Sherlock Holmes character.
Yes, yes.
And he more or less, but I'm thinking, like, the bits of Sherlock I've seen, he's a bit, like, that's been very successful. I'm thinking of more, I guess, both the British and the American one, because the American one's different again.
Yeah,
because they took a British, very British actor, and just made him some American dude.
Yeah,
so Sherlock is basically some American dude who's very good at being a detective.
Yeah,
yeah, and what's the woman?
Try and not
forget the name of that,
insult fans of it. It seems in Sherlock Holmes is a bit less of a dick.
In which series? Sorry, the British one.
Sherlock, the British Sherlock.
He's still a terrible person.
He kind of is, yeah.
Quite lovable.
But they don't have it all.
Yeah.
Like, if you think, and I'm thinking of now Sherlock Holmes, the Robert Downey Jr. Movie, he is all that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
In my books, not particularly likable.
And an action hero that has detective elements to him. Like, he's very different in the...
Oh, yeah, it's movies. a lot more action, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. It's really interesting. That's... The Sherlock is a really interesting... like study, because he's been in so many recently and they're all very different from each other.
Yeah, I'd love to see an article.
Cost any money to use that character?
I'd love to see an article, and maybe there is one that compares all of the iterations of Sherlock, which would be an incredible task of researching, by the way. of just down the years. But in particular, I want to see like these Sherlocks there. I think that's what's the American series called again? It's
Elementary.
Elementary, and then there's Sherlock on BBC, and then there's the Sherlock Holmes movies done by Guy Ritchie.
I think you could just check Tumblr.
I'm sure there's someone
people on Tumblr don't like Elementary.
Someone old who's just been alive the entire time. Well, not the entire time.
That would be
the entire film time.
Okay.
Of and he just knows, he or she just knows everything.
Yep. Just knows it at the top of his head. Or her
that
head.
Would be amazing if there's someone who's like specialized their whole life into learning about the film iterations of Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, and they're probably listening to this podcast and like getting super angry, like, you don't know anything about this. But Sophie, do you have any examples of characters that have change genre, or you know, that you don't feel is successful, or that you feel is successful?
Oh no, that's a difficult question. Go to Lucas.
Lucas, you asked the question. So, how was your day?
Was that the question?
The question was: do you think of any successful ones? You mentioned Sherlock. Would you consider that successful?
Yes.
Yeah, I would say so. It's commercially viable. And I know the BBC one is critically acclaimed. The movies, depending on what crowd you're aiming at, it's like a mixed bag, right? If you're going for the Sherlock Holmes purists, they don't like it, or some of them might. But yeah, it's a completely different person in that one.
I feel like we're bordering really closely on like the whole fan fiction debate, which yeah. I think is really interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, well, okay, this is a kind of example. Cassandra Clare's books, The Mortal Instruments, mm-hmm. were originally Harry Potter fan fiction.
Mm-hmm.
She originally wrote Harry Potter fan fiction and got very famous in the Harry Potter fan fiction world in the early 2000s and got a publishing deal based on them and then published a series with characters that are quite similar to the characters she was using, but I guess they weren't quite based. And it's really interesting to see that's where she got her start. But lots of people really vilify fan fiction, especially with the whole 50 Shades of Grey thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then also, like, even Jane Eyre was fan fiction, and, like, Jane Eyre was a character in a previous book. Yeah. And it's really interesting to see the debate on that topic. Oh, I think it's interesting.
Definitely fan fiction. That's a hard subject. Like, I don't have a lot of experience in it, but I've definitely seen people who have written it and who swear by it being a valid form of expression. What do you think?
I think that once you start writing that character, it's your interpretation of that character. I think that there are times when it's done quite badly and when it's still very similar to the other world, you probably shouldn't make any money from it. But like I said before, Jane Eyre was fan fiction, and the Romans entire, they did lots and lots of fan fiction. And I think there's something really awesome about taking someone else's literary work and then collaborating with it to make something better. Mm-hmm. Or not better, but like another creative piece.
Yeah. Yep. That's a good way of looking at it.
That's what not most people do. Mm. I think it's just they're just Mary Sue.
Yeah.
Just inserting themselves, or just here's what I wish would happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, full disclosure, when I was 7 or 8, I did stumble upon the Harry Potter fan fiction world. I was there in the Cassandra Clare days, and it is what got me into writing.
There you go.
I'm quite embarrassed about it now, but, you know.
I mean, whatever gets you into writing is still a good thing, definitely. I mean, the weirdest things on earth can get people into writing. But that one is a little bit more normal, I think, so there you go.
Yeah, I suppose. At least it is a kind of writing.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and there's, an amazing writing community around it.
Mm-hmm.
And, some really great people, so.
Before we quickly wrap up the subject, have you guys seen any movies, TV shows that you want to talk about very quickly in the last week, or new releases that you've seen, if you want to jump on Interstellar and say that was a great movie or anything like that? So it's not bad.
Actually. I don't see any movies.
I saw it. It was kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not a huge sci-fi fan, but it was fun. It was quite watchable. So
yeah, definitely. It's great storytelling, I think.
Beautiful, beautiful cinematography.
Yes.
Beautifully done. Like the way that they designed it was gorgeous. I was a little bit in awe.
Yeah.
And I think everyone was in that cinema.
Yeah, and definitely the scenes where he's talking to or seeing his children grow up. I thought that was a brilliant scene. Just really very, and I know a lot of people in the cinema had their tissues out at about that time. But yes, any films that you want to talk about, or shall we move right along?
No,
go ahead. All right, no. Sophie, anything?
No, sorry, my internet just cut out.
Oh yeah, it's tough. It's Skype. It's okay. All right, well, let's go on to our guest topic. And Sophie, as I said on your bio, you work for the ACT Writers Center.
I do.
What's your topic for today?
So my topic is talking about getting into the writing community and mm-hmm. getting involved with the writing community, and how I'm just going to say writing community about 50 times, how the writing community can help you in your own career, and also how you can help the writing community.
Yep.
Well, you can't see me, but I've got thumbs up.
Well, I've got thumbs up back. So there you go. So what is the writing community to you? Like, how did you get into it to start off with?
For emerging writers to get involved, and if they do, then they can end up being much more successful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
With your involvement with the Writers Center, like a lot of Writers Centers often have speakers to come over and to talk and such. Like, what kind of impact does that have? Can you see it like on the people that come in? Like, what kind of classes do you guys run? Do you have like master classes? Do you have like author talks? That kind of thing.
Yeah, so I work for the ACT Writers Centre, which is supported by, I'm just going to say it again just to make mm-hmm. sure, which is supported by the Australia Council and Arts ACT. And we have lots of different sort of professional development type things. And we do. We've got masterclasses, workshops and seminars. Mm-hmm. And we run them very often, and we have every sort of topic from we had one with Benjamin Law, who's quite a famous freelance writer, on freelance writing, and also one on memoir writing the other week. Last week we had Kaz Delaney come in and talk about YA, like young adult fiction. A huge range of topics aimed at a selection of different kinds of writers and people at different stages of their career. And it's amazing to see. We have some members that come into almost every workshop, and they are so passionate and so involved, and they get to talk and network with these really quite pronounced figures like Benjamin Law, for example.
Yeah.
And it's just a really exciting place to be.
Yep. Lucas, I think we've gone to the Melbourne Writers Festival a couple of times, and that's a bit of a different environment. What do you think about a writing community? Like, have you made use of it? What have you got out of it? How do you engage with it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been, for a short time, I was part of a writers group. It wasn't an official one. We met at a pub.
Yeah.
and I got some stuff out of it. I didn't. Mm-hmm. Kind of after a few months.
I'm gonna pause you there for a second. It seems like there's a bit of noise on your mic.
Okay. Okay.
Is it good now? On? Yep. It's good now.
Okay. Good. And like, it was helpful. It was mostly screenplay stuff, and mm-hmm. you know, it was just good to have someone there, some people there for workshopping.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now that was the main thing I got out of it.
That
I could go, you know, every once in a while and say, look, someone look at my stuff.
Yeah. Yep.
You don't always have people there to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true.
It's really good to have that support network, I suppose, around. And we talked about that on the previous podcast and talked about workshopping. Sophie, how's workshopping done in the ACT Writer Center? Like, how do you guys handle it? Is there specific events that people go to? How would one, if I was... I'm an emerging writer, and if I was to come to you in ACT, walk up and say, hi, Sophie, I'm interested in getting into a workshop or something like that, what would you tell them?
Well, I guess first we would ask what kind of writing they do, and I believe that this would be the same for every state has its own writer center.
Yep.
So I do believe that all writer centers would maybe not do exactly what we do, but they all have services for writers.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'd ask what kind of writing they do and see if we have any things in our program that they might be interested in. And then we would just put them in, and then they would pay to go, and they would be able to come on the day and access all of those services. We also have like our magazine and email newsletter and things like that that keeps everyone updated with not only our events but the events all around our region.
Mm-hmm.
that are in the literary community as well. Yeah.
I can definitely support that notion. And, you know, to everybody around the world, it's really good to get involved with your writing community. Here in Melbourne, we have Writers Victoria that I'm involved with. They're a good group of people. We have a couple of friends. They're former teachers as well. And it's great to go for events to see what kind of information that you can learn to pick up from people who have been in the industry for a lot longer, and to see people who haven't been in the industry for a lot longer, but
yeah,
talk about stuff that people can relate to. And it's always encouraging to see that, I think. Yeah, it's very helpful. And Sophie, we can add to that.
Yeah, no, I think that there's lots that you can learn from people at these events. But I think it's also important to remember that the Australian literary community is actually really small.
Yes.
And I might meet someone like Alex Adset, who is an agent who came to do a sort of an event with us the other week. I might meet her and not realize that she actually knows Simon Groth from If Book Up in Queensland and
yeah.
all of these kinds of things. Everyone knows everyone. And you might not be talking to someone who's very high up now, but you'll be talking to someone who knows everyone.
Yeah.
And it's really important to maintain those relationships, because you never know where they will end up or who they could end up introducing you to.
Yeah, definitely. And it's very much a thing where, you know, you can give a lot and you can also take a lot of information as well events. Especially when, you know, and the particular one we keep going back to is workshopping, but there's a lot more that is very good. And usually there are actual festivals that are held in Australia anyway. It's a state. And then you have the Writers Festival, the big one, the Melbourne Writers Festival, that's held here in Melbourne, which is very good to go to and definitely connect with that sort of writing or reading side if you're into that as well. But yeah, no, it's a very good topic, Sophie. Definite plug to any writer center that's out there. It's great to get involved. And
yeah, and remember that they also offer other services as well.
I think that's an internet drop.
But you can go there and they can help you connect to find an editor or find a manuscript assessment or do these events, or you'll find out about book launches and like all of these crazy things. And there's this whole literary scene that exists if you go looking for it.
Yep, definitely. And I think that's a great place to leave it. Thank you very much for listening to the podcast, everybody. It's been a great chat that we've had. Sophie, I'd like to thank you. You've been a fantastic guest. And we'd like to have you back at some other time. So thank you all for listening. I hope you've had a good time. Let's plug our social medias, because that's what we do at about this time. Sophie, would you start us off?
Sure. So if you'd like to find our Writers Centre, I actually run our Tumblr, which is actwriters.tumblr.com. We're also on Twitter under ACT Writers as well. Or you can follow me, and I am Miss MS. So.
Oh, that's a terrible time to cut out. You might need to repeat your Twitter name, Sophie.
Oh, sorry, I must have cut out.
Yeah.
I'm Miss Sophie Mannix, just MS Sophie Mannix on Twitter.
And yeah, fantastic. Lucas, where can we find you? Where can we find the Morning Bell?
Morningbell.net.
That's
it. We are also on Facebook and Tumblr and Twitter.
Literally everything.
Literally everything. Not that we pay attention to it all. We're not on Instagram.
Oh, there you go. You got to get on that, Lucas.
Are you on Pinterest?
We don't. What do we have to take pictures of?
Are you on Pinterest? That's a good question.
No, we're not either.
We're on Pinterest.
There you go. It's actually fantastic. Pinterest is a really good resource, especially for screenwriters, actually.
Yeah, it's lots of fun.
Lots of fun. Anyway, you can find me, Joel Martin, at The Pen of Joel on Twitter. You can find my website, thepenofjoel.com. I think that's what it's called. I'm pretty sure that's right. And yes, if you're interested in what I do as my job, you can follow me doing work for Legends of Eisenwald. It's a video game, and I do English editing for them and writing, hopefully some short stories in the future. But you can find out all about that on my website. And if you're interested in video game critique and story critique more specifically, you can find me, The Pen of Joel, on YouTube. So thank you all for having a great time here, and we'll catch you on the next episode. Have a good one. Thanks for coming. Bye.
Thank you.